Welcome to the Telehealth Heroes Podcast, a show about healthcare providers doing amazing things with telemedicine. I'm your host, Brandon Welch. On today's episode, we'll hear from Dr. Madhavi Jogi, an endocrinologist in Houston who started his own practice in the midst of the economic downturn of 2009 and totally redefined the patient experience. As a result, Dr. Jogi has created a successful and growing practice that revolves around the life that he wants to live. Let's check it out. Dr. Jogi, thank you for joining the show today.
Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it. My name is Madhavi Jogi. I'm a private practice endocrinologist in Houston, Texas. I have graduated from Baylor College of Medicine and couldn't find a job because nobody was hiring in the economic downturn 2008, 2009. And so I just started my own practice and have had to figure it all out since then. And since that time, we've grown to five or six doctors, and we're all practicing endocrinologists, private practice. So we are beholden to nobody but ourselves.
Awesome.
We don't work for other people, in other words, so we have to figure it all out ourselves.
Awesome. Okay, great intro there. So the first question I'm going to ask is, why medicine? Why did you get into medicine?
So the reason I got into medicine had a lot to do with the desire to help people and a cultural background where medicine was one of the very few options that a young Indian male in the 80s would have been choosing. My sister was already going into medicine. She's much older than me, 10 years older than me. And so I thought, well, this is naturally what I'll do. And I kind of fell into it. What I didn't know was I don't like emergencies. So when the show ER came on, I kept thinking, I don't want to do any of that. But everybody says, I want to be a doctor. Says, I watched ER and I love that stuff. So I realized very late into training that there are several areas of medicine that don't have too many emergencies, and endocrinology is one of those. So I like talking and I like preventing things before they happen. I don't like uncertainty. And so... So that's where endocrinology fits in, and why when I picked medicine, it was mostly to make people's lives more certain. That's kind of my approach to things.
So you went in and did your residency in endocrinology, and then when you finished that, what was your next step?
So I finished internal medicine, then I did a fellowship in endocrinology, so diabetes and thyroid and other hormones is what I specialize in. And so the next thing was, well, it's time to get a job. I couldn't get one. So that was a few months after everything went terribly bad in the economics of the U.S. in 2009. And so I asked a co-fellow of mine, hey, do you want to start a practice? And he said, let's talk in 6 months. I don't think he wanted to. Everybody wanted to just get a job. That's what we were trained to do. I don't have any family members that own businesses. So I couldn't get a job. He couldn't get a job. We met up for a beer and said, okay, I guess we have to start practice. And so I guess a few months later, we had to figure everything out from scratch. We had very few connections in business or medicine. And so I'm glad we did it that way. So the two of us started it, and then we've grown since then. But it was basically trial by fire, which is probably the best way to learn anything.
So you decide one day to start a business, put your shingle up on the door and said, all right, come on in, patients. What was that experience like as you said, all right, I'm putting it all out there. Yeah. I'm going to be a doctor, independent. And what was that experience like as you enter that?
The time, I would say it just seemed like a cool little adventure that I had no understanding of what I was getting into. I thought this is just something people do, but it was really hard to find information. This was early internet times. It was not, the iPhone was just coming out. So it wasn't that easy and nobody wanted to tell you how to do it. So I didn't really think of the financial burdens or how difficult it would be. I'd already been in debt, and it wasn't like another $100,000 or so would mean much. I mean, so I just showed up at the bank. I was like, hey, I'm a doctor. I need money. And they're like, yeah, here's a bunch of money, kiddo. Pay us back when you can. And I'm sure they were happy to just, give it to me because I guess doctors are suckers or a good bet, I guess. So but I got a great banker. It worked out well. So we took a little bit of money, opened a really small office, like 1,300 square feet. At the time, it seemed so big. And I had to figure everything out, how to clean the floors, how to pay the rent, how to hire staff, how to fire staff. I mean, everything that a general business would do. And quickly I realized that, and now many years later, I realized that I have a lot of friends that go to get an MBA. I had friends at the time, med school friends that did an MBA and did further studies and whatever that is, and masters of business something. And I realized that I learned it all in 1 year for much less than they paid. But I've realized over the last 10, I've been doing this since 2009, so I've realized it's best to start a business and figure it out yourself rather than having somebody else tell you how it should be. So it was really hard at the beginning, though. So the first 2 years, I thought, why am I doing this? What did I get myself into? An example is at the end of fellowship for endocrinology, I don't know if they still do this, but they have something called Endocrine University, which is basically everybody travels to Mayo, every graduating endocrinologist for that year. And so there were hundreds of us in the audience, and myself, the future partner of mine, business partner, and several hundred other endocrinologists. And they asked the question, we'd like to ask everybody to raise their hand, who's going into, we're going to ask who's going into private practice? And four hands out of, I don't know how, 300 people. It was me, my co-fellow, and then a couple other random people who I now know. And I thought, oh my God, everybody else is going to be employed. And what am I doing? This is insane. And I thought, how did they get jobs? And I couldn't get a job. But I realized that day that I kind of like doing the opposite of what everybody else says you should be doing. So, you know, everybody says, go get employed. And I was like running the other direction. Let's just figure this out. And everybody kept saying, why are you doing this? It's the end of healthcare. It's all the good times are over. You can't do it. You can't do it over and over. And so I guess that stressed me out for a while, but it seems to have gone pretty well so far. And I feel super happy about that decision now because nobody, and I'll say it over, autonomy in healthcare is a big deal for me. And I don't think I could work for somebody or I don't think I'd want to at all because of what I know now, it doesn't require that much effort. So being your own CEO essentially and CMO and COO and CFO all in one is kind of daunting, but we figured it out.
So tell us about your practice now as it exists today. You talked about how it started, but where's it at today?
So now we've gotten to two offices in different parts of Houston. We've added, we now have partnered in, so we have employed doctors, and then I feel like it's important to let everybody into this kind of world that was the norm 25, 30 years ago, which is you work somewhere, you build up trust, and you become a partner. You put some skin in the game. And so we partnered in two other doctors so far. We've had several other employed doctors, and the expectation is that we eventually would, you know, everybody's in it. That, you know, I don't want exclusion. Essentially, why would you work for a large corporation versus me? Well, it's because you want to have control of your destiny, of what your time is like, and how you treat patients as much as you can. Now, granted, insurance companies are still breathing down our necks, or make it difficult. But you know, so now that's where we are. We've grown. We have several doctors, a couple locations, a lot more than 1,300 square feet now. I think we're up to 5,000, 6,000, 7,000, some large number. And I'd say we have been pretty lucky with telemedicine a bit. I was super interested, and that's when we met. You were probably the third company I had, or 10th company I had worked with or interviewed at the time. I forget what year was that, 2014, 2015?
It's been a while.
It's been 7, 8 years. And I had this thing like, why are we even adding offices? Why do people even have to come to I don't want to go to the office to anybody. And so somehow I thought, I need to be a telemedicine guy. I didn't even know what it was at the time, but it just seemed logical. I think I had just watched Star Wars, and there was a scene where the Jedi Council are all holograms, or I don't remember, something like that. And I was like, that is a, you know, at the time ACOs were the word. I was like, that's an ACO. there's the cardiologist and this person, that person. I thought, well, why do we have to go anywhere? And already when patients come see me, anybody under the age of 30, 20, they don't even look at me hardly. There's a lot of, you know, on their phone and, oh, what did you say? Yeah. So I realized, man, if they're already on their phone, they're mentally not even here. Why do they even have to be here? So telemedicine was a no-brainer to me. And so a large percentage of our practice now, and 90% of what I do is tele. And I think it should be 100%. I have a lot of strong opinions on that, but the other people in the group, they're more traditional. They go, but they do, a fair percentage, maybe 20-30% telemedicine. But pre-pandemic, I was doing 30%, 40%, and that was unusual. That's what our practice is now.
So let's talk a little bit about what were some of the problems that you faced that really prompted you to start looking for something different and providing care different?
So the many problems. Well, one is I see all the money coming in and all the money going out. And the money going out was, so I can't solve healthcare. I can't solve delivery. I mean, I can't solve many things in healthcare that are beyond my pay grade. But what I could see was patients are frustrated. Doctors are frustrated. Why? Because there's a lot of wasted duplicate effort. There's a lot of time spent on the road in a waiting room. And then there's, we took classes on, how to make sure your patient feels like you spent time with them. Make sure you look them in the eye. I mean, these are things that you learned in med school, things that seem like total common sense, but because you only have sometimes 3 minutes with the patient, these things have been documented everywhere. So I kept thinking, I feel so bad. These patients are coming in and they're waiting forever to get in to see me because to see an endocrinologist, sometimes it takes a while. And then once it takes them forever to physically get here, then to wait in the waiting room, and then for a very short visit, and then they leave. And it's so quick. And I kept thinking, my mouth is dry at the end of the day. I've said the same thing many times, but there's not enough time to do what I need to do. And so the biggest problem I had was I looked around at my fellow doctors and what were they doing? And the large hospitals, they were saying, well, we need to just jam a bunch of people into the clinic and push them out. It's all volume-based because that's how healthcare is structured here. The whole value-based stuff, I'm not going to go into it, but I think there's a lot of problems to that I can't go into now. But I can say, well, how do I take this structure that I've been thrust into and now I have to compete with these big boys in town, and how do I make it make sense for me ethically to do what I want to do and survive, right? I mean, how can I, as a $2-3 group, compete with, I'm not going to name names, but corporate A, B, and C, who have billions of dollars in subsidies? Because endocrinology, honestly, it's a money loser for any organization other than we just talk. We don't get paid for doing things. We get paid for talking, and that's not considered valuable, I guess, at least right. In the way we get paid. So I would say, how would I survive and do what I felt was right? And so I decided I need to be able to have 1.5 hour visits, meaning that's what my visits were really long. So if you look back at my 2009 schedule, I was going to do everything the right way. I was going to spend an hour and a half with the patient. I was going to call them afterwards. I was going to write portal messages until I was, my fingers fell off, and I was going to emphasize this technology. But as I was doing that, I realized I'm going to go out of business. Patients actually weren't listening to me I made PowerPoints for every visit that I would see. I would create one. I'd say, well, this is what you need to know. So I just give a class. And then I read a book by Salman Khan. I don't know if you're that guy, the Khan Academy guy.
Yeah.
And I read his book, and I've been using Khan Academy for my kids. I kept thinking, this guy's a genius. And it just hit me. I was like, why are we doing it this way? Why am I talking over and over and just lecturing? Because I noticed people's eyes would glaze over, and the next visit they say, can you, I don't remember what we talked about. Can you send me that PowerPoint thing that you did?
Yeah.
And I kept thinking, why would I send you the PowerPoint? I just did a whole hour with you. I was about to go out of business from my perspective. I mean, seeing 5 patients a day doesn't work for, finances. So I felt like they were learning. And then I said, I'm going to flip the table here. How do you accomplish empathetic, solid care by going faster. So one option when you look around your competitors is let's hire mid-levels. Let's hire faster, more, maybe less effective, whatever you want to call it, people. But it's all based on the bottom line. And I thought, well, it's not about inefficient doctors. I mean, it's not about lack of doctors. To me, it's about a lack of efficient doctors who can systematize what they're doing. So I turned all these PowerPoints that I've been using for years. I had like a diabetes PowerPoint, a thyroid PowerPoint. Yeah. I was making, and it was already kind of weird to do that. My staff, I would tell them, oh, open the PowerPoint and have it ready, and then I'll go through it. And I think the other doctors thought it was kind of weird too. But I thought patients liked it. So I just converted that to a video one day after watching Khan Academy, reading his book, The Salon Guy. And I flipped the classroom basically. And I said, well, I need to get these videos to the patient before they even see me. I already know why they're coming. And I had already started using technology in funny ways. So at the time, there was no such thing as a new patient packet, right? You'd come to the doctor's office and then part of your visit was just filling out duplicate forms. And by the time you figured things out, you know, I didn't even have the form. So I had required since the very beginning, you have to fill out these forms. And I started creating intelligent forms at the time. And so this all leads into the telemedicine part here because it was already digitized. I already knew everything about why they were coming. And I had made these forms incredibly complex. Essentially, they were, okay, if you're coming, they were choose your own adventures for the history of present illness that we learned in med school how to take. The entire history was taken before I even talked to them. So then I thought, well, Salman, what would Salman Khan do? And I think he would take that information, make a video out of it and say, here's what you need to know. And so I had to create a system and it was just taking this technology and that technology because none of this existed. And I said, well, how do I make it all one thing? And I kind of made this patchwork of technology and patients notice it now. I mean, 15 years later, it still doesn't exist, but it's a lot of other people have started to do this now. So, you know, I was trying it in 2009, where they fill out a very intense packet online and finding a HIPAA compliant anything or none of that existed at that time. So my challenge was, how do I get a patient to understand what's wrong and to know why we're gonna do what we do and then understand what we did in the amount of time that the structure of healthcare allows, because I couldn't do it in the hour and a half. I mean, I could, but I wouldn't be here.
It's not sustainable.
And value-based healthcare, which was a buzzword even in 2009, is still not even, I don't even know what that is. So, you know, can't wait for that. And the happiness of my fellow endocrinologists was already, I mean, I'll be honest, we're not a happy group. So, or at least many aren't. I'm very happy. So I changed it around and we started delivering. And so after we received the information, we delivered videos that I made. So I created a video library of all the conditions that I treat. And so I send homework messages to people, literally homework. It says, you have homework, text message, read the portal message. Here's your homework. Here's the video. There's questions at the end. Make sure you get them right. Just like Khan Academy. And so, and then I do the visit. And the visits turn out to be more about the discussion about what they learned from what I talked about. And I learned a lot about a patient there. I learned, were they interested? Are they committed? Do they want to really help themselves? Because I could spend an hour and a half with everybody in the world, but some percentage of people don't want to be helped. And that helps me understand how to treat them. And then there's some people that are so motivated, oh my gosh, they'll take my video and they'll analyze it to no end, which is great, I love it. And so the discussions are much different than they would have been otherwise during our visits. And I would say way more productive. And honestly, it's faster. And they already feel like they know me, or at least I think they do. So, and that's where Doxy came in. That's where telemedicine came in. And so by the time I figured that all out and by 2014, I thought, well, this has made my life easier. It's made patients' lives happier. They understand where I'm going with everything. They can revisit those videos anytime they want and ask questions based off of it. So why am I going to the office? And that's where I said I could make this happen. And Doxy has been amazing since that time. And you know that we've been using you guys pretty heavily. Right at that time, our diabetes educator, who I had trained and from scratch from our office, Katie Spence, which maybe you remember her, but she said, I'm moving, I have to move to Dallas. And I thought, I can't, you can't leave. And so I had to create a solution right away. I can't lose a good provider that I trained. And so I remember a conversation, either you or somebody at Doxy early on said, it seems like you're the number one user of Doxy bandwidth, you know, this year. And that was mostly Katie and me. We were just constantly on there. And so, so anyway, so that's where we're born.
Did Katie stay on?
Oh yeah, Katie. Katie not only moved to Dallas. So let me tell you about Katie. Katie was like my. I trained her to become a diabetic educator. She was a very smart girl. She's type 1 diabetic herself, and so she was perfect for the role. And she wanted to be a diabetes educator. So I spent the time to teach her and get her certified. And so it's hard to find people that are really good in general, right? You know, people is the hard part. And so she moved to Dallas, and I said, no, you're not leaving. She's like, can you help me find a job? I was like, no, I'm not going to help you find a job. You're going to stay here. And she's like, what? And so I connected her via Doxy to the office. So she was still interacting with her office staff. This was before Slack and all that other stuff. So, and then I used Doxy to help her connect to patients. But there's no difference. I sent her all this super expensive equipment, multiple screens. At that time, it was weird. And then I envied her position because she didn't have to leave. She was just in her house all day. She had several kids. She ended up moving to Colorado for a while.
Wow.
No change. Just moved the computer, moved the server. She moved back to Dallas. Then her house flooded in a recent freeze in Texas. I don't know if you heard about that thing.
Oh, yeah.
But nothing changed. She's in a hotel. She's in another rental. She's in a VRBO. This was all That's recently. Weird. And it's, and her, and she's still working. I mean, it looks just whatever the background is. So I know she's been happy with it. And so every time I look at her, so hers is 100% tele. And it has been for many years now. And so, so I've been kind of looking to create that. And some people will say, isn't that weird? Don't you miss the patient interaction? Well, to me, this is a lot of interacting anyway. Other than physically touching you. And, honestly, I had little buttons in pre-pandemic that said, sorry, I don't shake hands. Cause I felt like that wasn't important. That was my thing. So now with Corona, COVID, I mean, honestly, it might as well be telemedicine in the room too. Cause you have this mask, you can't see patients anyway. This is better. I've had deaf patients that say, I can't understand. In the middle of the pandemic, I was like, well, I can't take my mask off. But you know what we can do? We could just do tele, and I go to another room. And I do Doxy with another room. And I thought, well, you know, it's not that hard. We could just do this from home. But
so I mean, so this deaf patient will come into the physical office, and then you'll go into another room and talk to them by video.
Yeah, so that happened. So like, let's say March 2020, so many interesting things I can do with tele that cannot physically be done or mentally be done. And I can give a lot of examples. So one of them is, I don't know if a patient coming in is deaf or not, right? I guess I could ask, but it's not on my packet. I already have too many questions on my packet. So when they get there, they're like, I can't hear you. And I'm like, oh. And so normally that wouldn't be an issue pre-pandemic because you can they can read my mouth. Now it's March, or I think it was April, and I was even nervous to be in the office, and the mask is on there. I have, not only do I have a mask on, I've got N95, then another thing on top, and then this helmet. Now it seems so crazy. I wish I had taken a picture of it. And I was doing that for 6 months. She was like, I have no idea what you're saying. And so I was like, I didn't even realize you were deaf, and I'd been seeing her for a while. And so I just went to another room, and I said, you could take your mask off in this room, and we could do it. And then from then on, I just, I said, you know, there's really no reason for you to come in. We could do this all by telemedicine. And then she sees my mouth, of course, and the visit went fine. And she was somebody that was, and there's many people, I will just say age 40 plus, it will say, I don't know about this tele thing. And she was one of them. That's why she was coming to physically see me. And then she was like, yeah, well, let's just keep doing this. So she was very excited about it because she was having a hard time with all of her doctors. Something else, so Katie Spent, our diabetic educator, at the beginning of this, I said, you know, why don't we take advantage of the fact that you're wherever and they're at home. So these patients are at home. You're talking about their lifestyle. Why don't we just take pictures of their lifestyle? Why don't we find out what are they really doing? So she'll be, and Doxy is so great because there's no app, right? It's just they're on their phone. They're walking around the room. And she'll say, and I've told her, like, have them go to their kitchen. Okay. Have them open the kitchen. Just say, hey, let's take a walk to your kitchen. Let open your fridge, open your pantry, turn the phone around. Let's take some pictures. Oh man, that changes some behaviors. You know, when you're seeing a diabetes patient, and they're like, no, I don't eat cookies and I don't eat this. You know, I'm not being a, you did something wrong, but it's useful to say, well, you know what? Granola bars are a form of a cookie. I mean, that's or cereal is not the best, and maybe we could change this or that. So those are things that, how could that be done? In fact, when you look at the physical world of seeing patients, the diabetes education classes that are done at the hospital, for example, it's literally a person's fictitious kitchen. Like, you go to this place, and I don't know if you've seen these things before, but they'll have cereal boxes and food, all kinds of boxes.
Yeah.
And I always thought, well, I don't need any of that stuff. That's weird. I have different things in my, and so I've always thought that's weird, but okay, that's how you do it. And they'll talk about food and grocery shopping, but why not just look at their kitchen, look at their grocery shop, go with them grocery shopping, cook with them. You know, these are all ideas that can occur now.
Yeah.
With tele. Now, depend now how you get paid for that, I don't know. Again, beyond my pay grade. But those are things that didn't exist pre-telemedicine that can be done. And that's one of the headaches, one of the other big headaches of problems to overcome here is an understanding that that makes sense, right? Why wouldn't you go into somebody's house to do things? Or why wouldn't you send a video ahead of time? To make sure that it's specific to our patients' questions that they've already filled out a month ago that they texted, you know? Why are we waiting to have everything done in 5 minutes? Fill out your paperwork, listen to the doctor, learn something, take a medicine, get out the door. To me, that makes no sense. If it's already out there, to get healthcare companies, insurances to pay for it was the biggest challenge. And I did a lot of this for free for a while. So, because we couldn't figure out, there was no playbook for this. And so we did a lot of weird things like, okay, we'll build the insurance and see if this code worked and that code worked, and there's billions of codes. So we had to create this mind map of what insurances paid for what, and our healthcare, our local societies, their recommendations were months behind. It would change every 5 minutes. The pandemic has made things easier, and I hope it does not roll back. And I don't plan to undo the percentage of telemedicine I'm doing, because I think it's better for patients. And sometimes I don't think a patient realizes it, but I think it's way better for compliance and ease of access to your doctor and comfort, right? And I also I went to the bank. The bank's never open when I'm available. 9 to 5, no lunch. Okay, when do I get to the bank? That's how a doc, then I realized one day, that's my hours. So I can do unusual hours. So I start at 5 a.m. and I finish at 10 p.m.
Oh, wow.
And who does that now? I can't get staff to come to my office. Well, I have Maria, my nurse. She will show up now. After many years, she's now like excited about it. And when I am in the office, she wants to be with me there. But I can do telemedicine with no staff, right? And start super early. And so I'm seeing shift workers that would not have seen a doctor now. I'm seeing lawyers and doctors and engineers at 9 p.m. who say, thank you for doing this, because otherwise I couldn't have made it at all. And people say, oh, I can't do Wednesdays ever. And I'll say, well, how about 10 p.m.? What? Or after work. Okay, great. I mean, then it no longer matters the day of the week, right?
Right.
So I don't need to work as many days, not at all. I work 2 days a week. I work the same number of hours in 2 days a week that the other staff people do, my other doctors do. And I've been off all day. I've been hanging out with my daughter and talking about schools and go pick up my kids. And so I, you know, 1 or 2 days a week, I'm offering incredible hours, right? But it doesn't matter that it's a Wednesday or middle of the week, because meet me at 5 p.m., 6 p.m., 7 p.m., 8 p.m. So it's amazing how these things that you would think are just the way it's done, I don't think it should be that way anymore. I think things should change. So
yeah, no, that's great. You've been practicing telemedicine for years now, going on 6-7 years. And so you were really ahead of the game, and then COVID came and everybody else jumped into the telemedicine pool. And so you've experienced telemedicine before COVID and now post COVID. What have you seen as been the major shift or change in your time practicing telemedicine?
I would say nothing for me personally.
For you,
nothing
personally.
Changed. Yeah. The day that the pandemic hit and everything was shut down, the state of Texas said, don't see patients. We honestly just went to our EMR and just said, flip the facility to tele, and the system was already there.
Wow.
Wow. So all this tinkering and, I mean, it was kind of just my own little adventure. Most of the doctors weren't that interested, but I was just so into it for the previous 5 to 6 years. Was very, very useful, I think. And because we went from 100 miles an hour to like almost no patients, but suddenly a few weeks later, people were like, well, yeah, why not do it? I've been doing telemedicine with this guy already. Why not? And so it didn't affect us as badly as it should have. And because we already had the infrastructure in place. Now, my wife is a dermatologist. Rena is a dermatologist who also had Doxy. But there's a difference there. So she's in a field where you have to physically touch people and look. And so that was much more difficult for her. But for a talking specialty like mine, it was amazing. And so there was no transition, honestly. It was like, okay, change this, change that, it's done. And so I didn't think we had a hiccup. It is very interesting to me what the light speed at which all the mountains that I thought were impossible, regulations that will never go away, like, you know, this insurance doesn't pay it, healthcare, there's a lawyer waiting to go get you. You know, you screw up on telemedicine and you would have done it differently in the office, right, doctor? And they're going to come get you. All these phantom, you know, problems just disappeared with the stroke of a few pen strokes, right? And that's what I've been telling patients. The only reason I can't do tele with you all the time is somebody in government has to sign something. So call your senator. It's not me. Yeah. And it's all about liability and payment. And so neither of which I can control. So at least with COVID, I've seen not only in our group things didn't change, but it was easy, and it's easy to flip the switch. I saw a lot of stress from other doctors. I guess a lot of people had called me that were not part of Doxy at the time and said, hey, I was looking up Doxy and I saw your face on their webpage. What? How do you do this? And I tried to explain it to them, and there was a lot of, I can't believe you've been doing this. I don't understand. I would say, no, just it's simple. It's free. Just try it. And the acceptance of tele as even a concept that should be mainstream, amazing, right? I'm sure you're experiencing it as probably exponential growth. And the funniest part is I still volunteer. I'm a volunteer faculty at Baylor College of Medicine, and I teach the fellows. And 8 months in the pandemic, 9 months, they reinstituted the clinic, and they're using a very large health EMR, which, right. you know, whatever it is. And I show up and I was like, where is the patient? And they're like, oh, there's no patient here. And I was like, oh, we'll do a phone call. They're like, no, we're gonna use this online thing. And remember, Brandon, when I met you, I mean, we were, this is at the very infancy, I guess, of Doxy. Yeah. But I was so proud when I walked in the room to see the patient with the fellow, and they get out of their big box EMR and it's Doxy. And I was like, oh my God, I know this program. They're like, oh, it's an amazing program. It's not part of the system. And I was like, I can't believe it. It was right there. So large systems are using you guys. So it didn't require much. And to me, it made no sense that all these healthcare things are siloed and so expensive. And that's part of the reason we had picked you was that at the time, and you're well aware of it, that the choices at the time, and still the choices are pay a lot of money for very rudimentary services, and we're really not that interested in making them any better. And when I talked to you, I was like, this guy knows what he's talking about. It's let's make it available for everybody because it's a no-brainer, and let's keep making it better. And so I've really enjoyed it. So to me, the acceptance and the ability of the rapidity at which the doctors that I'm around and the healthcare systems and the politicians and the political atmosphere has been amazingly fast. So I thought what was happening now was going to take another 15 years. And I was ready for that. I was ready to wait it out. But I couldn't be happier with what has happened. And I really hope it doesn't reverse. I mean, I'm sad that it took a pandemic, but to me, this is the way it should be.
Oh, that's great. So where do you think you would be or your organization would be if you didn't adopt telehealth?
I think we'd be done, honestly, or we would have, I think we would have really suffered a lot more. I mean, I'm not saying we didn't. There was a good 4-8 weeks that things were really terrible in terms of volume, but this, I would have had a lot less hair. So I would say that,
by the way.
Yeah, thanks. That's my wife. She keeps injecting it with all the stuff. That's her specialty is hair loss. So, but anyway, I remember thinking, I'm not stressed at all. But when people were calling me and asking, what do I do? How do I do it? I was getting calls from people at large institutions too. How did you do that? How did you did, you know, there's so many things from the, they check in, how do they pay you? Or they, you know, how do you give a refund? How do you, all this stuff in healthcare that doesn't even, you wouldn't think about because you just see somebody and take care of it. How do you get their insurance card? How do you get their license? How do you get anything? We had already figured all of that out years ago. How do you get the, so the part that I was blew me away was the new patient package. How do you get them to fill out the forms? I was like, online forms? You just do that? And they're like, oh, you still use paper? And everybody's like, yeah. So to me that, that the fact that, and all my friends that did it, I know they were very stressed out. I mean, this is unfamiliar territory with technology that you don't understand, with a large array of options that were popping up left and right. Like, not only did they already exist, but then everybody and their mother who didn't know anything about telemedicine, and I'm putting in all EMRs into that category, were trying to make a buck off this. And it was so obvious to me, but if you didn't know anything about telemedicine and suddenly you know, I have to just do this, you're going to take the easiest route, which is to probably pay somebody and hope that they know what they're doing. Unfortunately, there's just a lot of players, I feel, that are doing it for the money. And I feel anytime you're doing something for the money, it can only go wrong. And so you could tell the way the things are structured. For example, the waiting room in Doxy is this concept that just doesn't exist anywhere. And the time spent and then chatting with the people, it's like a real waiting room. It's how it should be. So I think the number one benefit of having looked into this early, the early adopter tends to have less stress when things happen, but the early adopter, and I tend to be an early adopter on a lot of things, when things become mainstream, you think, wait, am I behind now? Maybe I got too comfortable, but I don't feel that way with Doxy. And Tela to me is just, it's here to stay. So, or at least I hope. Yeah.
So how has your perspective of healthcare changed from the time that you started as a young medical student till now?
I will tell you, it changed on August 9th, 2009. So up until that day, which was the day I physically unlocked the door to see my first and only patient for the day as a private practice doctor, and I still remember his name, and he never came back, and I spent 3 hours with him because I thought that was the right thing to do at the time, right? So I would say it all changed then, because up until then, you're part of a machine. You are just being pushed in a conveyor belt of big healthcare to do what big healthcare wants. The government, pharmaceutical, health delivery machine, whatever that is. And you don't even realize it. So I had never really thought about private or what it meant to own your patient, right? To own everything that happens, not just what happens with the patient, but all aspects of healthcare. Because it's not just, did you give them the right medicine or did you talk to them? It's, well, did you bill them wrong? Were you being treated unfairly? Could you do something for free? Things that you, just the autonomy of running your own thing changed everything for me. So my perspective of healthcare changed that day because I had to learn. It was like the Wizard of Oz where there's the guy behind the curtain and you're like, oh my God, is this really how it is? I couldn't believe it. Like every day for the first 2 years of starting my practice, I thought, I cannot believe that this is what is really happening. And as a fellow and a resident and a student, you just don't see it. And you don't see it because it's intentionally not shown to you because there's some guy in a suit that has nothing to do with healthcare that takes care of that stuff, right?
Right.
But it is the reason healthcare is so difficult these days, I think, so.
That's great. So going back, what is one thing you would have done different as you were working on your practice and getting that set up? And I'm sure you made mistakes along the way, but what is something you would go back and do different?
So I think I would do almost everything the same. Several things I would have done differently. One is I wish I had thought, I don't know if I could have done that to myself. I wish I had thought of telemedicine day one, right? Oh. Because I didn't know what it was. I never even one day in my, how many years of training, I had never been exposed to, understood, or had a concept of what anything was. Telemedicine, telehealth, televisits, whatever these differentials are, because I'd only read about them, and those academic articles are so, like, they don't mean anything to me. And so one thing is that why expand physically if you can expand virtually? And I'm now wrestling with that. Why do we need an office in every corner of town, right? What purpose does that serve? And so one thing I wish was, you know, because once you start doing that, you kind of have to support this system that you created. And that's, and then to the nth degree would be how hospitals do it. Why do we even have hospitals? Why are people there all the time? You know, if you physically need something like what's happening with the ICUs, okay, fine. But what about, why can't all this other stuff be done virtually and then just go to the hospital for the procedure and leave the same day?
Right.
You know, so if I had thought about that earlier, I wish I'd implemented it earlier, and maybe I wouldn't have needed to stress out even about rent, right? Mm-hmm. If I started today, maybe I would have just been virtual and just done a you know, once a month rental somewhere. You know, this may be a little weird to say it out loud, but the startup costs with tele would have been much less. So that would have been probably my only thing that I wish I did differently. A lot of people ask if I would have, you know, just gotten a job and just taken salary and been done with it, and I couldn't do it. Oh, one other thing is my wife, I was scared. I didn't want her to start a private practice because I thought this is a lot of work, but she ended up doing it, and it's been the best thing ever for her. And I kind of wish I had done it earlier for her, starting your own thing. And I guess I don't have too many regrets. I just wish I did things sooner.
Sure. I mean, that's valuable in itself. What do you see as one of the biggest keys to being successful today in running your practice?
To expect that the next day will hold some unknown challenge and be fine with it. Because if it is boring, everything's changing so fast that the approach to what you think is dogmatically always going to be that way, it's always that rock will never move. Those rocks are crumbling throughout, and everybody agrees on all levels of society. These monolithic thoughts are changing, and so you have to be ready to run with it. And so I would say
your change, but embrace that change.
Yeah, embrace the change. And it's kind of like the Silicon Valley way when you see these reality show or whatever, the way they interact with society, you know, roll with the changes and then try something. If it doesn't work, try it this. Right. And even that's a dogma in healthcare. No, you can't play with people's lives that way. You can't try something different. And I think that it comes down to liability. Right. And so my license is now, you know, at risk for anything that I try that's new. Even telemedicine is so new that I was worried about my license 6 years ago. Would somebody from the board come and say, you're an evil, terrible person, you know, we're going to take your license away for trying something new? So there's a little bit of just hoping for the best kind of attitude. So that, I think that just being ready for the new and the change, it'll keep your hair on. So I remember the first time I lost my manager and a bunch of staff left for whatever reason. I was like, oh my God, it's the worst. And literally my hair fell out the next, I mean, it got really thin the next day. And I was like, what am I doing to myself? In fact, that's why my wife started to go into, she's a dermatologist, but she does mostly hair. Because that day she's like, why are you so stressed out? And I was like, this is why you shouldn't run your own practice. It's so difficult. And she's like, I can't be married to a bald guy yet. And I was like, what? And you can't add to my stress. And she was like, no, I'm going to go in. So anyway, she's now like 90% hair loss. And that's funny that it happened. But since that time, I realized that wasn't worth it. You know, it was actually good for me that kind of change, whatever that change has happened. And so I'm excited about change in general, but it makes a lot of people uncomfortable, including myself, but you just have to kind of lean into the discomfort, I guess.
Yeah, but that is the key to being successful, is the world's going to change with or without you, so you got to
I'm only going to get older, and part of the reason I thought telemedicine was a no-brainer was, remember, there was the 20-year-old on their phone at the time in 2009. I was like, what are they doing with this phone? Why are they being so rude and not looking at me or talking to me? But that was whatever the social media thing was at the time. And people, it's going to be connected to their brains at some point. So, I mean, I'm going to be 85, 90, 100 years old at some point. I like what I do. So that means my patients will be 50 years younger than me at some point, right? So what would that be like? And I feel like you just have to accept the change because you can't stop it. I'm no longer the decision maker in the world. It's the 20 to 30 year olds. So I'll just accept it. I mean, I have young kids too. So they do things that I think are weird, but I'm like, oh, okay, sounds good. Let's go with that. So I feel like that's been the best, that'd be the best advice I'd give somebody. Just go with the change and don't feel bad that it's not the way it always has been. That move my, who moved my cheese? That book. Yeah. I read that in like in middle school or something. And it's true. Don't just keep going for the same cheese. It's going to change.
Yeah. And so speaking of that, what do you see the future of healthcare to be?
Well, my crystal ball is really accurate. No, I don't know. I don't think anybody yet has seen what it's going to be, but I can tell you what I wish it would be, because if you think about my grandmother, who, when she was born, there were horse and buggies, right? And you know, over the next whatever period of time, we've gone from that to, you know, customers taking trips to the moon or to outer space, whatever it is. I mean, that's and it's accelerating. So we all can agree on that. So I feel like whatever we're doing today will look so primitive. And so this, I go back to Star Wars and I say, that's how I wish it were. And that's how I know it's going to be, because it doesn't, the stethoscope was the advance of the century, right? To physically hear something in the body. But the stethoscope is the Model T of, you know, the physical exam, honestly, as much as it'll pain my old teachers who spent, you know, I can do a physical exam. I know a lot of new doctors that can't, but the value of that technology of the physical exam stethoscope is far diminished now. And in the future, it'll be almost useless, because once the cost of things go down, then there is no impediment to just knowing everything all at once. So it currently, there's the dogma of don't order so many tests because of the expense, but that's not how 20-year-olds think. You want as many tests as you can get. I mean, so I have to take my license and put the liability and miss something. To me, that doesn't make any sense from my perspective. And from the patient's perspective, they don't care that you just saved healthcare $5. It doesn't, to me, that discussion is so out there, it makes no sense. So I think once prices go down, then holograms will be a norm. It'll be groups of physicians working together that aren't working physically under the same building, that are independent. And so I come back to the independence of medicine. And the only thing I worry about in terms of competition is, how do I compete against a robot, the other robotic hologram that, you know, I'm in a group talking to five different hologram doctors and the patients there as well. That's what I'm imagining the future is, that we don't have to leave. And so I think the robot part is the fear of artificial intelligence is overblown, because you still need the human touch. Or let me not say touch, the human view or empathy, that's the currency. It's empathy. And so that's why I think AI is not a threat as much as we think it would be in healthcare. And I think that holograms should be the norm. So, right. So everything should be virtual.
So what is the most satisfying aspect of your career today?
So I should say that I love seeing patients and making them better. And I should say that I'm happy when they smile and we connect. But I'm not going to say that, because that is true. I do love that part of my job. But the most satisfying part of what I've been doing since I started the practice, and I help run my wife's practice, is creating a system that runs on its own with minimal effort on the part of the user or the creator. And to me, that is not something I understood about myself until I had my own autonomy. And I think that's one of the problems with education in general right now, is it breeds disautonomous people. We are just following a cookbook and a test and what, but I feel like that is what I'm most excited about, is that I can create a platform, essentially, that, so it's not the healthcare, it's the delivery of it, the systems, you can call it whatever you want, there's all kinds, you know, the protocols, the algorithms, these are the other names for it, but that's what I get excited about, because it automatically translates into the happy patient, the patient that feels good about what their care is. But that's what gets me going. And I didn't know that. Maybe if I said that in my med school interview, I would be a doctor. Yeah. But medicine needs that. You know, we need people that are willing to think about a process and make the process better, because the process of medicine hasn't changed in several hundred years. And I hope there are more people, and I know there are lots of people like that in healthcare. The problem is most of them aren't doctors. Most of them are not. And this is why I feel physicians are losing or complaining. They shouldn't be complaining, but they're complaining about the lack of the changes that are occurring without their consent or whatever you want to call it. But part of it is if you don't think about it, then somebody else is going to think about it for you. So that's what gets me going. So in my practice, I have to be that guy that does, somebody has to do it. So I enjoy it. It's kind of what it gets me up in the morning.
Yeah. What advice do you have for other providers?
Stop working for somebody else now. That's number one. Because when you're not in charge, things will happen that you didn't want and the patient didn't need. And number two would be tele anything, virtual anything is probably better for the patients than the care you're delivering if you do it the right way, in a way that's completely different from what you think should be. On paper, things are done one way, but you can do it 20 times better and probably definitely differently online. You can't think about it as a paper process. You have to think about it as a new process, like it's a completely new thing. So, and if I was a brand new doctor that didn't know anything about where to go, what kind of job to get, I'd say start your own thing and figure it out on your own, because you don't need people figuring it out for you. You can do it yourself. And if you are in an institution that's large and, you know, they're telling you what to do, push back and tell them, I want to do something different, you know, because if you feel like it's the right thing to do and it's what you would want as a patient, then do that. What would you want is kind of, you know, the golden rule. So I think I would want to have quick access to my doctor with lots of information, education, and feel good about what they're saying and understand it. So that would be the advice I'd give.
Great. Do you have any final words?
I wanted to thank Doxy for being there and not selling out. I hope that's not going.
No, we're holding strong. We're holding strong.
Yeah, I want to say that without Doxy, I don't know what I would do. I won't name names of other places, but I say that the backbone of what I am doing is your company. Like, literally, cool. If you guys didn't exist, I know I would be having a really hard time. And the way, so I really want to thank you, Brandon, that, you know, when people read about your story, it's true. I tell people, this is the real the deal. I mean, this guy is doing it for the right reasons. And so that's another thing I'd say. If you're not doing things for the right reasons, hopefully non-monetary reasons, you can't really, you really aren't going the right direction. And so I feel like you're, I mean, this is just, I don't know you personally, but just reading about you and how things have gone with Doxy in the last 10 years, just it speaks to the fact that you're not in it for the money or the fame, or you're here for right reasons. And
for you guys, for you.
Yeah, it's working. It's working great. I really want to thank you. I used to send you guys random emails once every few months, say, great job, it's amazing. But now you guys are so big, I don't even know if you get those emails anymore. But I'm so impressed with Doxy and the telemedicine world. And I feel like you guys are really leading it. And that really speaks to the why. You're doing it for the right reasons. And the other guys aren't there yet because it's just, you know.
Well, don't tell them the secret, all right? We'll just keep it between ourselves.
It's a secret, but that's what I would say. Thanks for all you do, and I appreciate it.
Cool. Well, Dr. Jogi, thank you so much for your time today.
Oh, thank you.